We need to talk, brothers and sisters. We need to talk. The problem is, it is hard for us to talk together these days. It seems almost as though all the things we used to think we all agreed on are being torn open for debate. Debate and dispute. Angry dispute. It's disturbing even to list the topics or simply to read the headlines in the newspaper. The treatment of immigrants, especially immigrant children. The continuing challenge of dealing with past injustices that were and are defined by race. Relationships between religious communities that somehow never move past the surface of suspicion. The values by which our government should work. For a community like ours, all of this is a little disorienting. We want to think that all the people that we share our church with, of course, agree with us on most things, or at least on the big things. When we've spent a little time away from each other, when we've been off on summer vacation or away for a while, especially after a summer like this one, well, maybe it feels as though we have to walk a little gingerly, be a little wary of each other as we all get back together. Maybe someone sitting near you in the pew really disagrees with your views on, well, who knows? Of course, it didn't used to be this way. Not because we all agreed on everything, but because we didn't expect to agree on everything. The church, especially the Episcopal Church, was formed out of disagreement. It brought together people who could not agree on much, except that it didn't make much sense to fight actual bloody wars over their religious disagreements anymore. That was true throughout most of the history of our country. Exactly because we are a nation of immigrants, when people first came here, almost regardless of where they came from, they looked for a church that was the closest thing to the same church they had left in the old country. And the church became the place that gave them a toehold for building a new life in a new place. What they had in common was that they were all starting over again. The church would help them learn the language, set them up with networks of friends who could help them find jobs and schools and mates and get them started on a new road. But that did not mean they had a lot else in common. In fact, they did not. The churches that were filled with our immigrant grandparents and great-grandparents were filled with people who came from every possible part of the socioeconomic spectrum, had varying levels of education, and had political views that were all over the map. They were liberal and conservative, shop owners and factory workers and farmers, people who brought their traditions from the places they had come from and met up with people who had different traditions from different places. And somehow, they had to manage to get along when it came to creating the community of the church. And in that, they were no different from the church the way the church had begun. When Paul writes his letter to that church in Rome, he knows he's writing to a church made up of people who are not necessarily seeing eye to eye on everything. Some of them have come into the faith from Jewish families, Jewish traditions, and Jewish backgrounds. And some of them have not. They were non-Jews, not just from Rome, but from all ports of call around the empire. And they had little else in common other than not being Jewish. Out of this assortment of people, the church emerged. Caught up in the unifying power of the gospel message about forgiveness and mercy and the urgency of coming into a deeper relationship with God. But that unity was always breaking down around the edges of their differences. From the very beginning, Christian community has never been easy. Paul addresses this like the pastoral theologian he is by referring the church back to its founding principles. He connects the core values of the Jewish part of the community, the covenant code of the commandments, to the central moral teaching of Jesus, the teaching about loving neighbors as we love ourselves. All of that is summarized beautifully in that little piece of Romans that Tim read for us this morning. In this one teaching, Paul is trying to bridge the differences in that community by reminding them of the values that transcend their differences and to point them to their higher, greater purpose. But it's Jesus who gives the most practical advice for dealing with difficult discussions in the community. Because Jesus teaches those disciples of his, and so he teaches us, that at the very center of Christian community is a commitment to the idea of staying in relationship with people you don't agree with. Even people who say things and do things that cause you discomfort or even pain. Over the centuries of our history, this teaching from Matthew that you heard read in the gospel this morning, that teaching has often and wrongly been used to justify ostracizing people, excommunicating people, shunning people, moving them outside the embrace of the community. But that is not the point that Jesus is trying to make, and it is not the most important lesson he is trying to teach. That careful, patient, gentle discourse about talking with someone, taking them aside, and trying to bridge that difference, that is meant for a specific purpose: to avoid false harmony, to make sure that the community is built not of polite pretending, but of genuine and strong relationships. Because if we allow that to happen, if we allow our preference for politeness to paper over the real disagreements we have, we build our house out of straw. It's by finding ways to live into and through the things that may divide us, right through them, while holding on to each other in love, that we come out stronger on the other side. So that is the point of this teaching. It is not about outcasting people. It's about how we deal with the reality that communities made up of human beings always have differences, and how we are called to deal with those differences in grace-filled ways. Maybe awkward, maybe difficult, but grace-filled. And there's one thing more. Jesus teaches his community that if they can manage to do this, if they can find ways of regarding each other with respect in the midst of their differences, they will be able to create communities of consensus and mutual respect. And those communities will indeed accomplish great things on God's behalf. Now, brothers and sisters, I am not saying that there are great differences or disagreements within our community that we should be worried about. There are not, at least none that I am aware of. But there is a bit of a danger here, one that has been growing, not just here, but everywhere, for 4 or 5 decades now. It's a danger spoken of by Bill Bishop in his book, The Big Sort, the idea that our strong preference to avoid disagreement is being lived out in our determination to engage our lives only with people and communities that think like we do. We live in neighborhoods among people like ourselves. We work largely among people like ourselves. We either find groups to join of like-minded people, or we don't join at all. And that means we really are different from the church of our grandparents and great-grandparents. Not because we're more diverse, even though we'd like to think that we are, but because we're less diverse and more homogeneous in the ways that we think. We expect to be pretty much among people like us, and we lose our skills for disagreement. But here's the call, folks. We are Christians in a moment of tremendous and deepening discord in our national life. And because we are, we have a particular responsibility to model loving, genuine disagreement, to model how to live through those difficult conversations in ways that can give us the ability to remain in relationship with the people that we disagree with, and even those who do us harm. We have to learn those skills here because they are desperately needed in the world outside our doors. And it is for us to lead that world by graceful, even awkward example. Amen.